Seventh-day Adventist Church, and I bring you greetings from Maricopa Village, where I serve that community down there. It's rare that we get to talk about what each other is doing, so I'm going to share with you a little bit what's happening. Glenview Academy, the school that's attached to our church, is up to 173 kids. This very weekend, our principal, our treasurer, our business manager, and one of our teachers are heading down to a church to this afternoon to help 30 more families apply with their kids for next year. We could be looking at 210 possibly next year. Now, this is a big deal because it was just a few years ago that we were looking at maybe 70 kids and possibly having to let go of a teacher or two. So the explosion that God has had in the Arizona Conference is amazing. And all of our schools across the board, Maricopa Village Academy has went from 7 students to 19, and we have a 6-student waiting list. And the only reason they're on the waiting list is because we can't serve anymore. We are at capacity, and we're not in a position to hire another teacher. So we're reveling in God's blessings. Our Maricopa Village community, the church down there, has went from, and I'm not being modest here, this is just the truth of it. When I was asked to come down and help about a year ago, we would have a Sabbath morning of maybe 9 to 11 people. And so now to walk into church and see 30 to 35 faces ready to worship God is a blessing from God that I'm just so happy to be a part of it. And I'm grateful to God for what he's done. And obviously Glendale Church is just plugging along under Gary Vinden's leadership, and I'm grateful to be tutored and mentored by him. I want to read something to you. It's a text message that I got from a former student, and I read this to you because I talk about schools a lot. My passion is with the young people. That's just where my passion is. But I want to tell you what your prayers and support mean to us that are directly involved with our kids. I want to read this to you because this was a student of mine who I actually had to call suicide watch on because he was suicidal. He was at a point where he was going to give up on life. He is at our high school, and this is what he texted me a few days ago. Yo, Mr. Eddie. He's high school. Long time no talk, LOL. Anyways, to sum things up, I've never been so close to God in my life right now, and I am so happy. You're part of the reason why I'm close to God, and thank you. Have a good night. He texts me a little bit later, says, I'm reading Matthew because the previous time I read it, it didn't make sense to me. I'm getting to understand everything more this time and very happy, and I just want to know more. I have a question for Pastor Zach, that's their school chaplain, tomorrow, who also went through our academy, and we'll be having Bible study. Before I was reading this, I wanted to have a relationship with Jesus, but I didn't have the spark. Now I feel a huge desire to want to know more. This is the power of education in the Arizona Conference. This is what we have in our schools, and your support, your prayers, your leadership, your mentorship to us that are out there doing it is vast. Your knowledge and wisdom and life experience is necessary for me so I can pass it on to those who are next. And that's how it works. I know we're out here near Sun City, but there's no such word as retirement in the Bible. We need you. And don't ever think that we don't. And I am so very grateful to be here one more time. When I got the invitation back, I said, really? They like me. They really like me. I was like a little schoolgirl. So I thank you for letting me come back again, and let's get going for today. And I promise you, because I know how this looks. Let's just throw it out there. Martin Luther King Jr. holiday is coming. You have a young black preacher up front. It looks like we're about to get into some stuff today. But I promise you this, because this is how I work. No matter what's happening politically, no matter what culture I belong to, no matter where I'm from, I serve God. God alone. Everything else comes underneath that. I talk about what he tells me to talk about. I do what he tells me to do. Sometimes it feels good. Sometimes it hurts. But today you're going to get a message from him. I promise you that. Okay? So let's just get that out of the way. Bow your heads with me, please. Father in heaven, we are here today to hear from you. What am I? but a tool in your belt to be used as you see fit, God. This is your day. These are your people. I am your vessel. You have given us all of this. The Sabbath day, this building, waking us up this morning, breath in our body, energy to function. The sun is shining, and all of this, Father, is because of you. You got us here this morning. Bless those that are here. Bless those that are on the way. Bless those who couldn't make it, Father. But most importantly, let us hear from you today. Let me talk when you say talk, and let me be quiet when you say sit down. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I am giving a message to you, and I love your Pastor Greg. We have met for lunch a couple of times as trying to get to know some of the pastors in the community. We have a Wednesday pastor's lunch that we kind of started at Glendale, and once a month we invite area pastors out to come with us because sometimes you can get isolated in this position. I'm blessed to be an associate right now, so I have a built-in community of pastors. And so we invited Pastor Greg, and we get to sit down and talk and laugh and just be guys for a minute. You know, it's important to just be a guy for a second. And we were talking just about things and how life was going. And when he asked me to come back again, I was kind of smiling and laughing. And someone said this morning, you preach like he does. And I smiled and laughed again. I said, you know what? I really like your pastor. That's why. I tend to, you know, birds of a feather and all that. So Pastor Greg is becoming a very good friend of mine. I didn't know too much about him, but having to meet him and meeting up with him, it's fun to get to know what's happening around in our community. One of these days, I'm going to get him down to Maricopa, so if I steal him one weekend, please allow me to do that. Just one weekend I want to take him. Today's message is going to be based on a story. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go into a story. And you may have heard this story once or twice before. I respect that. I just heard it a few months ago. I shared this story at the Glendale Church before Christmas with a purpose. And I was told, you need to tell this story wherever you go. And when Pastor Greg asked me to come, I prayed about it and God said, you know that fits, right? I said, okay. So if you've heard this before, my mother, who's back there, I shared it with her, and she said, oh, I know that story. I said, well, I just heard it, and I'm still in tears, so you'll have to excuse me. If you've heard this story before, bear with me. I'm going to take a little literary license, if I could, and change it a little bit. But I want you to listen this morning, and I want you to hear what God has for you out of this story. The story this morning is about the love of a father, and it is the love of the father. But the love of a father. And we're going to tie it all in at the end. There was a father who worked at a train station. And he had a son who was attending school. And he loved his son very much. He loved in the afternoons that he could, when he worked the evening shift, he would go and pack a bag and make hot chocolate. And he would run down to his son's school because he could pick up his son from school and he could take his son to work with him. And his son loved going to work with his dad. His dad had a cool job. He would go to a very important bridge and his job was to raise and lower the bridge into the port. The boats that were coming into port could drop off their goods and make money, and then he had to lower the bridge when the people on the trains were coming by. And his dad had taken him many times to where he worked, and his son would watch the people in the trains as they go by and look at them and smile and wonder where they were going, wonder what they were doing, wonder where their lives were headed, wonder who they were. And this particular day, the dad goes down and picks up his son from school and he's banging on the window and his son sees him right when school lets out and he runs and he jumps into his dad's arms and there is so much love between the son and the father. It's amazing. And dad reaches into his bag because it was cold. He pulls out the hot chocolate and the son is sipping and he's skipping along as he walks with dad. But this is a special boy. He sees things that dad sometimes walks past. This boy would look at other people as they were walking. He, you know, sometimes kids are at a lower level. They see things. My son can see things on the ground that I got to bend down to see. Son, where did I drop that? He'll find it. He's at a different level than me. So he sees people. And he's walking, and he sees a man looking up in the air with his arms up in a robe and house shoes. And he's trying to explain himself to the lady who's looking down at him from the balcony as she's throwing his clothes out the window. And he's trying to explain himself, and she's having no parts of it. And you could tell that they're in pain. The lady's crying. He's upset. And the son wonders, what's going on with them? I wish that I could help them. He tells dad, what's happening there? And he says, son, they're having some issues. We got to go. We're going to be late for work. So they keep walking. And the son passes by a young child like his age, sitting out in front of a fountain. It was a wishing well. And his kid was sitting there in front of the fountain just crying. And the kid looked as he holds his dad's hand, and he looks and he wonders what's wrong with the kid. Why are you crying and why are you by yourself? And he wants to go and help and just tell this kid it's going to be okay and hug him. But daddy says, we're going to be late. We got to go. They're passing through the park and they see another couple, and they're both sitting next to each other, hugged very close. The man has his arm around her, and he's sitting there on his phone texting. And the lady is sitting there, so very alone. And a kid wonders how two people could be together, but not be happy. And as they walk, he sees another guy riding a bike, and the guy's just plowing through, weaving in and out of traffic, on his way in a rush. And he wonders where that guy's going in such a hurry, passing all this beauty that's around him. And as they get to the trolley that would take them to his train station, he gets on, and the kid's there with his dad, and he's happy. He's overjoyed. He's with dad, but he continues to look out into the world and see people that are hurting. And so he sits in the train, the trolley, and he talks to dad, and he says, Dad, I really want to do something great with my life. I want to do something that helps people. And his dad looks at him, smiles. That's my boy. He says, son, you're going to be great. Your life is going to change the world. You're going to be important. You're going to be wonderful. And he gets encouragement, and they hug, and they ride to dad's station. And they get off, and dad looks at his son. He says, now you know the routine. I got to go into the station and relieve the guy on duty. But you can go down by the creek, the river where the boats come, and play. But you know the routine. You stay where I can see you through the window. Don't leave that window. If you can see me, I can see you. You can play all you want to as long as I can see you. He's like, yeah, Dad, I know, I know, I know. So dad walks, and kid goes down. And down by the river, in a box that they had made before, was the son's very favorite things to play with. This boy loved to fish. And he would be out there all day. While dad's working, he would be fishing. And he loved to catch something because him and dad would go cook it up. So he loved to be out there fishing. While he was waiting on the fish, he could play and run and jump and skip rocks across the river and wave to the boat captains that went by. He loved being down there. And anytime he wanted to, he could look up in the window and see dad. Dad went in, relieved the person ahead of him on duty, came in and started to work. He checked the train schedule. He was looked for boats. He made sure all the gears that worked the bridge were functioning properly. And he checked himself in. I'm on duty. And he looked out the window, and there's his son. And he waves, smiles. That's his boy. His precious boy. And Dad continues to work. Every now and then he'd look over, look out the window, and all of a sudden he looked out and there was a boat coming. And he looked down, he looked at the train schedule. He said, oh yeah, there's plenty of time. So he raises the bridge. Bad at sound effects, but that was the best train bridge raise I got. He raised the bridge. And the boat's coming down full of containers. And they know the kid. They see him out there all the time. So they're waving, and the kid's waving to him. Hey, how you doing? And he's skipping rocks, and he's got his fishing rods in the water, and he's having a good time. And the dad looks at his son and looks at the boat, and the boat's going through. And he says, okay, let me check the gears and make sure I got enough oil pressure. And he looks over, and he's checking the gears. And his son hears a whistle. Woo, woo. Hears a whistle. And he listens. He says, is that a train? And he hears it again. It's distant. Woo, woo. And all of a sudden, he starts yelling, Dad! Dad! The train's coming! There's a train! And he looks up, and Dad's not in the window. Dad's over there checking the gears and making sure the oil pressure and stuff is fine. And he's trying to shout to Dad, there's a train coming. Now, if you know anything about the train bridges and how they work, when the bridge went up, it sent a signal down the railroad tracks to a light. There's always a light. There's always a signal. And on the train, on the light, the bridge went up and the train signal went red. That means stop. There's no bridge. But that train called life, sometimes in life we miss the signal. And that train conductor missed the signal that day. And the train kept coming. Dad finally looks out the window and sees his son. And he says, Dad, the train. And he looks out this other window across from him, and he sees a smokestack, and the train's coming. They didn't stop. And so he looks immediately at the boat. How far is the boat across? And the boat's only halfway through. There's not going to be enough time. So what do I do here? What do I do? And he looks at the train, and he looks at the boat, and he looks at the train, and he looks to his son, and his son is no longer there. Where's my son? See, they had been there so much. They had been there. He'd been with Dad so much. Dad had talked to him and showed him how the bridge operated. He showed him all the gears. He showed him where the train went up and down. He showed him where all the levers were. He showed him the schedule. He showed him the inside of the station, the outside of the station. He's an inquisitive kid. He wanted to know how it worked. And the boy remembered the bridge comes down slowly from where Dad is, but there's an emergency lever on the tracks. And if I pull that emergency lever right as the boat goes under, the bridge will come down fast. Daddy taught me that. And so the kid ran to go help his father. And Dad is panicked. He's looking at the train. He's looking at the boat. It's 3/4 of the way through now. He's almost done. He's looking at the train. He's looking at the boat. And in the minute of trying to figure out what to do, he looks down and sees his son reaching for the red lever that was inside a manhole. And the kid had it. He had the lever. He was almost there. But the issue was that the lever was not designed for a child to reach. It was designed for a grown man to reach. And as he's reaching for the lever, he just grasps it. And he reached too far. And he fell in. He fell in. To where all the gears are turning. To where everything has to move. He fell in. And the dad grabs his head and says, no, because now it's up to the dad. What do I do? Do I save the people on this train, or do I save my boy and derail everybody on this train's life? What do I do now? Save him on a train, save my son. Save him on a train, save my son. What do I do? And right as the father's making up his mind on what to do, he sees the son reach his hand up one more time. And he thinks, great, my son's going to get out. But he doesn't get out. The son reaches up, grabs the lever, and pulls it. And the bridge comes down. And the son dies. The father screams. He grabs his head and he just screams. And he runs down to the tracks. And he looks at the train as it's passing by. These people who will never know what it just cost him. These people who will never understand what his son just did for their lives. These people who had no concept that the bridge was even out. They're just going along with their lives. He remembers each and every face. He remembers the man in the back. Playing kissy face with a woman that wasn't his. He remembers the three girls in the middle section who were getting ready to go party in the next town. He remembers the girl in the bathroom stall in the front of the train who was shooting up her last shot of drugs to inject in her arm. And he remembers her face as the train went by. And the father is standing there, blocked from getting his son by all these people passing by, and he just screams. He's looking at the train, and he's screaming out for anybody to acknowledge what he is going through, for anybody to acknowledge what his son just did for them. Does anybody even care? And he just screams out of pain. For his boy. And the lady in the front of the train, who was in the bathroom getting ready to shoot up, looks at the father screaming out as she passes by. And she thinks to herself, whatever he's going through is worse than what I'm going through. And she pours her drugs out onto the floor and sits back in her seat. And just stares. As the train goes by, on about its day, nobody on that train will understand. Nobody on that train will know. The father runs over to the manhole, to where the lever is, and reaches down and pulls up the body of his son. He's covered in blood. He's mangled. He grabs his son and he pulls him close. And he's just rocking, calling out for his boy. Wake up, son. Wake up. But he won't. He won't. The last image you see is this father carrying his bodies of his son back to the trolley. So he can take him to a hospital to try to get some help. The story continues and you see this father. And it doesn't say the passing of time. It doesn't say, but he's walking and he's walking through a station. And when you see what he's looking for, you understand he's walking through a station and he passes by the very train that his son gave his life for. And he's looking at it and he takes his beanie off and he walks into where that conductor was that missed the signal. And he looks in there. He's just looking around. And he gets off the train and he walks by and he's passing by every window. Because burned in his head is every single face that he saw. And as he looks in the windows, there goes the young lady who was shooting up drugs. There goes the girls that were getting ready to go party in the next town, doing their makeup and dolling themselves up. There goes the guy in the back playing kissy face with a woman that wasn't his. Only this time when he looks in the window, he sees another face with every single one of them. In every single window, he sees the face of his smiling boy waving back at him. He passes by window after window and he sees the face of his son smiling, laughing, and waving, blowing kisses back to his dad in every single window. The dad pulls away, starts walking down the street, hands in his pockets. Doesn't say where he's going, doesn't say what he's looking for, but he's looking for something. And as he approaches a street corner, getting ready to cross the street, his eyes were down, and he looks up, and he sees something that makes him stop. Coming across the street was a young lady holding her son. And in her arms, she's kissing her baby, rocking him, and she's walking across the street. And as her eyes come off of her boy and look up and meet his eyes, his face does like this. He smiles for the first time. He puts his arms up in victory for the first time. He's found what he's looking for. Because what he saw was the young lady who was in the front of that train about to shoot up with drugs, he saw her with the next generation of followers of heaven in her arms. And he shouted victory. My son's life meant something. My son's life meant something. She now has a child of her own that she is raising. And he understands now his son's sacrifice. When I first saw this story, and I saw it in my house by myself, middle of the night, I was inconsolable for hours. I didn't sleep that night because I realized something in my entire life that I never felt or realized before. We always talk about the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, as well we should. But how many times have we ever considered the sacrifice of the Father to give his only begotten Son? See, church, I love you and I love Jesus. I got family members who are close to me, my blood relatives I love, but if you ask me to give my son's life for you, you have lost your mind. It's not, no, not my boy, not my innocent boy, not my precious little angel, not my son, not my namesake, not my likeness, not my lineage, no, 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 not giving my son. For what? For you? No. John 3:16 says, "For God so loved the world." So often we look at the scripture and pass by it like it means nothing.
Oh, look. Oh, yeah, John 3:16. We know that. What makes me a Christian?
Do you really understand what it means to sacrifice your love?
See, there's a part of the Bible that isn't written that I always wonder about. And since I saw this, I always wonder about. And I'm just going to share it with you. This is not the Bible. This is just Pastor Eddie thinking. What was that Friday night like when Jesus died? Because in the history of his story, God had never been without his son. Even in Mary's womb, he could go in and say, that's my boy. That's my little boy. When he was learning, when he was crawling, when he was walking, when he was learning to speak the language, God could never have been prouder of his son. He'd never been a moment without his son. And now the Sabbath approaches, where all of heaven comes to rejoice. All of heaven comes together. All of the universe comes together. All of the family comes together. And for the first time ever, there is no Jesus on Sabbath. What was it like for God? See, if I was God and I was on the throne, and Father, forgive me for making this example, you are far beyond me, but if I was him and I was the Father, and I'm just talking about not the all-powerful God, I'm just talking about Father God, if I was on the throne, I would tell the angels to stop recording. Turn off the cameras, put your tablets away. Put your pencils down. I have to go check on my boy. Do not follow me. This is not for anyone. This is between me and my son. And I would have left the throne. And I'd have went down to his grave. And I would have walked through that rock. And I would have stepped foot on that cold floor. And I would have said, son, son. And I would have reached out my hand to touch his foot and just rock it. Son? I would have taken my hand and run them through the holes that people put in his feet. I would have taken my hands and rubbed them on every single lash on his body. I would have touched his pierced side where we stabbed him through to make sure he was dead. I'd have rubbed his chest where his lungs asphyxiated as he hung there on the cross, filling with fluid. I'd have reached up and touched his hands, put my hand in his and held him one last time. I'd have took my gown, my tunic, my church suit, and I'd have wiped the blood off of his brow and reached down and kissed his face. I would have taken that blasted crown of thorns off his head and put it down. And I would have picked up my boy and I would have held him. Because my innocent son gave his life. And when it was my call, I could have stopped it at any time. I chose you. I chose you. I chose you. I just wonder what that Friday night was like. For God. Because he so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son for you and I. I wonder what it was like when he went back to heaven without his son. I wonder what that Sabbath was like up there. Dead quiet. Wondering, waiting, listening, all eyes on the throne. Father, what are we doing? What's the plan? And what happens next? We go through sometimes life not understanding all that God gave for We sang a song early in the song service called We Are Family. I have come to a point in my life because of this story that I don't want my father to hurt anymore. He's hurt enough. I have two boys, and I can't imagine what it would be like to hold the lifeless body of my child. I know people who have experienced it, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. So I come to a point where I don't want my father to hurt anymore. We have done enough. So I have taken him up on his challenge, and I have taken him up on his command. Father, I don't want you to miss not one more child. Not one more. I will go out and tell everyone I come in contact with about you, because I don't want you to hurt anymore. I don't want anyone to be without you. But most importantly, I don't want you who I know to be without them. See, we don't understand. We're going to be in paradise. God is going to ensure that, but he's the only one who can't forget. He's the only one who will still remember. He's the only one who will know every name of every seat of every person who should have been there. And he doesn't remember your sin. He remembers your smile. He remembers your laugh. He remembers your hug. He remembers the color of your eyes. He remembers what you sounded like when you slept. He remembers everything about you. And he's going to spend eternity missing his children because I didn't do my job, not on my watch. I will go tell everyone. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care what it sounds like. I don't care what it feels like. I don't care if I'm in the middle of Taco Bell or I'm at family dinner. Somebody's going to know about Jesus today. Somebody is going to find out about Jesus today because my father has hurt enough. And it's my love for him that is driving me to tell the world. See, church family, it was mentioned in Sabbath school for the part that I heard. We live in a crazy place right now. There is a lot of dysfunction, hate, anger, bitterness, going around. And some of us don't know or don't care what it's like to walk in each other's shoes. I've got to be able to sit down and listen to you. And you've got to be able to sit down and listen to me. Or else that song we sang is null and void. We're not family. One of Jesus' last requests, and understand who he was praying this to. Jesus sat on the cross and said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Understand what that prayer is. Dad? Yes, son. I'm going to be dead soon. Don't hold it against them, even though they're killing me. I want them to be my neighbors with me in heaven. Understand what he's asking. Don't hold it against me, against them, the one that put the crown of thorns on my head. Don't hold it against them, the one that stabbed me in the side. Don't hold it against them, the ones that gave me vinegar when I asked for water. Don't hold it against them, the ones who spit on me as I was walking my way up. Don't hold it against them, the ones who threw rocks at me, the ones who laughed, the ones who tore my clothes to take them home for souvenirs. Don't hold it against them, Dad. They don't know any better. I want them with me. In heaven. I want them living right next door. I want to be able to go out my room and knock on their door and say hello. Don't hold it against them, God. And yet we, humanity, finds ways to divide ourselves and hold it against each other. So what if your cornbread looks different than mine? So what if I got to take my shoes off when I walk in your house? So what if you raise your kids differently? So what if your family traditions are different? So what if the color of your skin is a little darker than mine? A little lighter than mine? A little redder than mine? A little yellower than mine? So what? God said, I came for them all. And who are you to keep my kids from me? Because that's what will be recorded. How dare you keep my children from me? You are now an enemy of the state. We, believers in Christ, in this family, have a job to do that goes far beyond what happens outside these doors. Our job is to tell everyone about his love, and in doing so, we will learn to love each other. I promise. I promise. Because if I look at you the way my father looked at you, you're just a brother to me. You're just a sister to me. All the extras mean nothing. I want you as my neighbor in heaven. Ain't gonna be no your heaven and my heaven. There are some faiths that believe that. That's not the God I serve. It's us. It's us. We are all in. And when you look at people the way the Son looked at us, when you understand the sacrifice he was willing to make, and when he was willing to make the sacrifice, it was still all on the Father. At any time he could have pulled the plug. At any time he could have said, not my boy. At any time he could have said, that's enough. Any one of those lashes, God could have sent a legion down from heaven and stopped it at any time. Even though the Son was willing, it was the Father's call. And when you realize what he gave for you and me, you begin to look at people as his children, and I don't want him to feel any more pain for missing one. He's hurt enough.